The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning to you. 7 minutes past nine, Monday, the 27th of November, 2023. How are you all keeping? Thanks for joining us again for another week of the 9 till noon show. And what have we got coming up in this programme? Not a massive fan of menus, but anyway, we've got important stuff coming up. We're going to look back on Katie Taylor's win at the weekend. Jason Quigley's going to join us hopefully a little later on. We're going to get reaction to the various meetings that took place with Ministers Anne Rabbitt and Minister Stephen Donnelly on Friday and Thursday, respectively. Actually, it's not respectively, it's the other way around. But anyway, we're going to have reaction to that. And there's so much more besides coming up between now and 12. So we want you on board. We want you commenting, getting involved in the conversation, sending your views, your opinions and issues you want to talk about or information you want to pass on to 0866 25000 WhatsApps. And text that number. Don't forget, you can WhatsApp your voice notes to us as well. We had a couple of days where we were really busy in that regard, and then it died off a little. So if that's the way you prefer to communicate with us, please feel free to do so. If you want to give us a call, it's 07491 25000, and then your emails come into us via email, of course, to comments@highlandradio.com. Right, so let's have a run through what's making the front and inside of some of today's newspapers. The Derry People, Donegal News. The Health Minister has vowed there will be greater focus on the recruitment of permanent consultants at Letterkenny University Hospital. In a one-on-one interview with this newspaper on Friday, the Minister admitted that the issues around the letting go of two locum consultants in Letterkenny University Hospital within months of one another after concerns arose about the standard of their work was something that shouldn't have had to happen. A locum consultant urologist was placed on leave in September after concerns came to light and is now no longer working at the hospital. The Quality and Patient Safety Service at the Sealta University Healthcare Group is now reviewing a number of cases where concerns about care of patients have been identified. Minister Donnelly was in Letterkenny on Friday to turn the sod on the new 110-bed Letterkenny Community Hospital. We're going to hear from consultants and GPs who met with the minister. I'm not saying he was being deflective and I'm not talking behind his back, so to speak, but one of the big conversations he was trying to get across to me, or one of the big points, this is that we're too negative. There's too much negative conversation, and I will be interested to find out if he believes consultants are being too negative, if GPs are being too negative, or if he did actually drill down into the issues which those health professionals have been talking about. The Derry News this morning, the Northern Ireland Housing Executive has spent in excess of £500,000 taxiing clients to and from temporary or emergency accommodation across the north in the last 3 years. The exact figure of £522,000 was revealed in a Freedom of Information response from NHG to Derry representative Daryl Christie. Let's get on to the Nationals now, and the fallout continues and the conversation still continues following on from the riots in Dublin that followed on from that awful attack on children and their carers last week. The front of the Irish Times, senior Gardaí have promised large-scale arrests in the coming weeks of ringleaders and participants responsible for last week's violence in Dublin city centre. Commissioner Drew Harris and his senior officers are under pressure from the government to make rapid progress in the investigation into the widespread rioting which followed the stabbing of three school children and a care worker on Parnell Square on Thursday afternoon. The 49-year-old suspect remains under armed guard in hospital. A 5-year-old girl, more importantly, and a woman remain in a serious condition in hospital following the incident. The two other children that were injured, thankfully, have been released from hospital. And I heard Minister Simon Harris interviewed on this morning on national radio. And it's remarkable the different approach there is to government representatives compared to opposition representatives. And I'm not going to lie, the toughest question that Simon Harris was asked was a question he asked of himself. I kid you not. No questions that I heard anyway, unless it was after I switched over, as it relates to, you know, confidence in the Justice Minister or speculation that some within Fianna Fáil don't have confidence in her and so on and so forth. That wasn't teased out at all. But anyway, maybe it happened after I tuned out. The Irish Independent this morning. Competition has returned to the energy market, which is good news for you guys out there and me, with a new cut price electricity rate being announced by a supplier. New player, Uno Energy, is offering a new fixed rate that is 5% cheaper than its previous lowest rate. It said the new rate will mean its offering will be €430 below the standard rate offers with other suppliers. It's hoped that the move will spark a new round of reductions from its larger rivals, which implemented price cuts of between 10% and 20% at the start of this month. So look, I'm not promoting any particular energy supplier, but it's pretty easy to switch. It's not a big hassle. You're not without power for a week or anything. You know, consider it if you can save €430. The new unit rate for electricity from Uno is 31.55 cent per kilowatt hour. This is down from 33.35 cent. Uno said this fixed rate is 5% cheaper than its previous lowest rate and makes it the cheapest supplier in the market. So, as I say, hopefully now that will lead to a cascade. The only thing is, you see, the power companies know that many of us are not inclined to switch, or we don't even know when we're out of contract. So, unfortunately, you know, the big companies will stick with them, brand loyal. But you can switch and save money. On to the Irish Daily Mail now. What do you think of this controversy surrounding Leo Varadkar? Because a tweet by Leo Varadkar referring to Hamas hostage Emily Handers having been lost has sparked a diplomatic spat with Israel. The Taoiseach welcomed the release of the 9-year-old Irish Israeli girl on Saturday as a day of enormous joy and relief for Emily Hand and her family. An innocent child who was lost has now been found and returned and we breathe a massive sigh of relief. Our prayers have been answered, he posted on social media platform X. However, Israel's Foreign Minister Eli Cohen accused Mr. Varadkar of needing a reality check, saying Emily was not lost but kidnapped. Mr. Cohen said he has summoned the Irish ambassador to Tel Aviv for a reprimand following Mr. Varadkar's statement. Now, it's really quite clear. I thought it was clear anyway. Maybe it's a clumsy choice of words, but I think it's explained more in the wider press release from Leo Varadkar or the wider statement. At the beginning, Thomas Hand was of the view that his lovely young daughter had died. I think he was even quoted at that time, as any parent may well do so in their grief, as saying it's almost better off that she has been killed rather than kidnapped because you don't know what might happen to her. And I think his comments at that time were understandable. But then it transpired that she wasn't amongst the dead in Israel and had in fact been kidnapped. And my understanding of the biblical reference was that she was lost and then found. It was thought she was dead, but then it transpired that she was alive. And I don't think in any way, I think Leo Varadkar and his government have been really quite strong in their criticism of Israel and of Hamas and the attacks. And I think it's been taken out of context to suit an agenda, particularly on X, because X don't like censorship. A lot of people listening to this show don't like censorship either. And I think it's been amplified. And I think Elon Musk said Leo Varadkar hates the Irish. I don't believe he does. Do you think he does? I don't think he does. You might not like him as a leader, but I don't think he hates the Irish. And I think his comments they were messy, right? They were clumsy. He was ill-advised, perhaps, but it's clear that he was not sympathising with Hamas, and he or whoever wrote it for him was trying to make that biblical hymn reference. It's Amazing Grace, isn't it? Which obviously is relevant to this part of the world as well. But anyway, what do you think about that? 086 60 25,000. You might not have to agree with Leo Varadkar politically, but was he clumsy in his words? Was he wrong in his words? Should he, the Israelis, be sanctioning Ireland over the back of that? What do you think? 086 60 25,000. The Irish Daily Star tells us that the suspect in the Dublin creche knife attack may have suffered serious brain injuries in the alleged incident. Sources have told the paper that detectives probing Thursday's attack on children and a worker at Gaelscoil Caolaistheamuira on Parnell Square East fear the injuries may be permanent, and that has led to fears it could be a significant amount of time before he's fit to be questioned about the horror attack in which three children and a worker were attacked. The suspect, an Algerian-born male who is an Irish citizen, is still in an induced coma in the city's Mater Hospital. The man, who's in his 50s, suffered serious head injuries allegedly connected to the incident. Gardaí from the city's Mountie station are still waiting to question him, but won't be allowed to until he is medically fit enough. But they said at the start that these may be permanent injuries, so he may never be in a position or in a condition to be questioned. On to the Irish Sun now, and there was a new poll over the weekend which showed that support for Sinn Féin has dropped by 3 points. A new poll has indicated, but Mary Lou McDonald's party remains far ahead of rivals Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil. The latest Business Post Red Sea poll has support for Sinn Féin at 29%. This is down from 32% last month, but well ahead of Fine Gael on 20% and Fianna Fáil on 16%. And there is a degree of, and we know this from radio listenership figures, there is a plus and minus which that change is within, really, effectively. So statistically, it's actually unchanged right across the board. And finally, did you enjoy Katie Taylor's victory at the weekend? As I said to Lee just before the news at 9, I have humble pie to eat. I just genuinely, as much respect as I have for her, I just did not think that she could improve as much as needed to fight a bigger person. She's gone up a weight level. She went up a weight level to become a 2-times undisputed champion at 2 weights at the same time. Really quite remarkable. But anyway, they are going to have a third, and I think Chantel Cameron deserves that. And hopefully, fingers crossed, it's in Croke Park. Eddie Hearn, he's her promoter. He's pleaded with GEA bosses to cut costs to allow Ireland's greatest ever athlete, Katie Taylor, to fight at Croke Park. The Matchroom promoter has called on pressure to be put on the GEA to row back on costs around hosting a fight at the association's headquarters. Hearn previously claimed it is 3 times more expensive than hiring Wembley Stadium. It's understood that an agreement had been made on the hiring of the stadium, but the stumbling block between the GEA and Matchroom came to around $500,000 for the cost of security and other expenses. Now, I would not be surprised with everything that's going on if the government intervened on that. In fact, they could actually do themselves a big favour by spending that €500,000. It could come out of the sports budget. And I think with how things went on Saturday and how things might go in Croke Park, it'd be really good PR for them for very, very little money. But anyway, now, as you know, the Minister for Health came up to Donegal on Friday. There was a number of reasons to do so. Turn the sod on the new community hospital in Letterkenny to meet with consultants who we'll hear from in a short while, and also to meet with GPs, amongst them Dr. Raghavan Paratian. Good morning to you, Doctor. Thank you so much for your time today.
Good morning, Greg. Thank you for having me.
No, it's our pleasure, Doctor, and it's great to have you on the show. You were one of the initial 78 GPs who signed the letter that was forwarded to the hospital management, Sialta management, and on, of course, to the health minister. Before we get to the meeting, what drove you to say, right, I'm going to put, because it's pretty much unprecedented to get 78 GPs from right across the county to say, right, we need to let our views be known. What drove you, Doctor?
Well, what drove myself and I and my our colleagues was really the stories we were getting, the feedback we were getting from our patients about the conditions in A&E and the fact that they weren't getting through A&E, how difficult it was, and how actually quite scared some of our patients were going through A&E because of the difficulties. And that's just to highlight, this is not a reflection on the hardworking doctors and nurses and porters in A&E who are trying their very best in very, very difficult conditions. So we got a lot of feedback, and I think the one thing that really really made every one of us GPs take action was in the summer. There was A&E was chock-a-block. There was 14 ambulances backed up. There were no ambulances available for Letterkenny, Sligo, Leitrim. And I think that when we realized that this was in the summer and winter coming through, we had to voice our concerns. And this has been going on for a while, and we had to just step up. What I think the important thing for us now as GPs is that we've taken this action. It was a very difficult action. It was a very unprecedented action. But we really did it because this morning, all the GPs here in Donegal can actually look at their patients and say, we have now done the very best we can on your behalf. We are advocating for our patients, for their safety and for their well-being. And now, if things don't change, what we didn't want is patients turning around and say, well, doctor, you knew the story. Why did you not do anything? We can now tell them we have actually spoken to one guy in this country, the one person who can actually move the dial and makes things happen. And that was Friday meeting with our minister on Friday. So that's really was, I think, out of desperation for the stories we heard that prompted all of us to do this.
Did you get the line from him about, you know, he needed to come here and dispel the negativity? And I hope he understood that none of us are being negative for the fun of it. We're not there to discourage people from attending in a hospital. We're not there to make the life of staff there difficult. We're actually standing together, I think, Doctor. That's what I thought we were all doing, to say, look, we can improve things, but we have to recognise where the problems are. Like, no one's being negative for the sake of it. And certainly we're here, I think, supporting the hospital, not detracting from it. But you have to represent your patients' views as well.
Yeah. No, I think, look, when this all kicked off, the minister got letters from the GPs. And then, of course, there was a second letter, a very strong letter from the consultants in the hospital highlighting the issues here. The initial meeting was supposed to be in Dublin, but we very politely declined that. And with a bit of persuasion, managed to make him come up here. The reason we wanted him here to come up to Donegal is because he needed to see what was going on here locally. He needed to meet the people. He needed to meet us on home ground and understand our frustration, our desperation to try and change things for our patients. And I heard your interview with him before he met us, and he was a wee bit upset about us scaremongering. We're not scaremongering. Every day, every practice, in general practice in Donegal, hears patients saying, please, doctor, don't send me in there. I can't go there anymore. It's chaotic. You know, I'm sitting in a chair for 14 hours. I'm in pain, et cetera, et cetera. This is not scaremongering. This is just reality and the truth. In all fairness to the minister, when he got the letter and he understood that we were coming to Dublin and he was going to come up and turn the sod and meet us, he did send a preliminary team here for fact-finding. And they came and they did a very impressive team that came and had a look at A&E particularly and spoke to the people that they needed to speak to. And on Friday, Minister Donald was here together with his whole team to meet us. And we had a very frank and open and honest discussion about what was going on. We highlighted, you know, story after story of patients' concerns and their journey through A&E and through the hospital. And he did take it on board. He listened. He asked, you know, relevant questions about it. And I think the penny has probably dropped after the meeting with the general practitioners of how that we have to change things here in Donegal, that we need to have our hospital back up and running, properly funded, properly staffed, porters, nurses, junior doctors, senior doctors. And some of the services that are being slowly eroded and being sent further down south on the west to Galway have to be brought back here, or Sligo for that matter. And that we have to have those services reinstated. We had three missions. We had three really demands to the minister on the Friday meeting, and they were very straightforward. We wanted an external review of the hospital. And the reason we wanted an external review is because we didn't want the hospital or the SELTA management to correct their own homework. That never works. Now, whether it's going to be an external company that comes and does it, or whether it's an HSE team, that I'll leave that to the minister and his team to decide. But we have to have an external forensic review of what is going on in the hospital. We have to figure out why is it that highly trained, highly specialized, and highly motivated consultants come in through Letterkenny, and then before you know, they're gone. Mm. We have essentially a revolving door on the front door. We don't have a front door. It's a revolving door. And that has to be addressed. Why are consultants who are dedicated to do something suddenly find they can't work here anymore? Mm-hmm. And that is critical, because if you don't deal with that problem, you're not going to fix this. You need to deal with it. And if you look at the numbers here, and I think you may have those numbers, about funding in the SELTA group, it's glaringly obvious that we need proper funding for our hospitals. We have manpower issues, underfunding issues, etc. But our three demands are very straightforward. An external review, number one. Number two, the urgent and imminent opening of a medical assessment unit. We have a purpose-built unit here in Letterkenny that was supposed to be to open in February 23. The Royal College of Physicians came up and said, this needs to be open. It has to be properly manned. Consultants, junior doctors, office staff, and ring-fenced. The beds have to be ring-fenced. We had 10 to 12 beds there. There's only two beds left. It's not even functioning at the moment. Part, if we had this medical assessment unit with access to diagnostic, in other words, ultrasound, x-rays, MRI, CT, et cetera, it would divert a lot of patients going to A&E and help us to sort out the problems that could
happen. And I know there's a third strand to it, but it's also important how that unit is staffed, I presume, that we're not taking resources from the hospital and it gets clogged up a different way. But the one thing I thought interesting is the minister, off the back of the team that were up here, said that I think it was half of people that were admitted through ED were discharged the next day. He said that was a particular concern. I'm not sure if he was levelling that at GPs unnecessarily sending people up. But what that seemed to be a critical point he wanted to get across. What do you say to that?
Well, I'll say to that is that that's actually an argument. That's exactly an argument for a medical assessment unit.
Yeah.
What happens is we don't have access to urgent outpatient appointments. Some patients don't necessarily have to go into A&E, but when we've run out of options, we as GP are working well beyond our remits, looking after very sick patients. They're begging us not to send them in. But what we're doing is, look, we have to get you in, because then hopefully when they get in, they can get access to further investigations. But those investigations don't have to be done through A&E. They could be done through the medical assessment unit. We could have access straight to the outpatients. So I could say to a lady or a gentleman, we can get you an appointment next week. Sit tight. You'll be seen in the outpatients and they will then further investigate you. But we don't have that access, and that's the problem.
Thanks, Doctor. I wanted you to make that connection because it's so logical. Stay with me, if you don't mind, for a moment, because Dr. Michael Sugrue has a clinic shortly. He, of course, is consultant breast surgeon at Letterkenny University Hospital and has joined us on a couple of occasions now to highlight these issues, and he's with us. Good morning to you, Michael Sugrue. Dr. Michael Sugrue, how are you keeping this morning?
Good, Greg. Thank you for asking me to come on and share what happened with the minister and his advisors.
Your assessment of that meeting, Michael?
I think it was an excellent opportunity to meet with the minister and his advisors. He was very keen to listen. He was well briefed by six representatives of the 29 consultants that signed the letter. He listened for almost an hour and a half. He's completely aware of the issues that we raised. And I think it was a very positive meeting. It was a very friendly meeting. And we were all impressed that he was willing to take on board all the items that we identified. So we had a very positive feel about, first of all, him coming and also taking on board that he interacted with the family doctors, the GPs. So positive feeling, Greg, that he has been well briefed and is fully aware of all the issues that we have raised.
There were some rumblings around his visit that he wanted to talk to consultants about how the fact that, you know, there's new contracts there, there are some more consultants in certain areas, but the amount of work consultants are doing, public work that they're doing, wasn't increasing as perhaps it should. Did that come up for conversation, or was that, as I say, just rumblings from his team prior to that meeting?
Yes, data was presented to that effect. That was the data we've seen for the first time. I think this data is important. It is important to look and review work activity. I know myself, I see approximately between 2,500 and 3,000 outpatient appointees per year. A figure of 900 was mentioned in the discussion. So I think that data is very, very important. And I know that the minister has been briefed by us relating to five key points that we put to him, along with 30 points in the letter. So he would go back now, and he has an opportunity, having been briefed so thoroughly, that he will now be in a position, I'm sure, to look at those and come up with some solutions. And those key issues that we addressed with the minister, these are the six representative consultants of the 29 that signed the letter. We talked about the emergency department cubicles, the addition of staff. We talked about rapid build beds, and he has offered 48 beds. We believe that that should be on a demand capacity modelling about 77. We've mentioned that the budget deficit for him, and he's going to look into that. We've talked about facilities for oncology, hematology, ICU, high dependency, and we spoke about the elective hospital that is going to be hopefully planned in the region. So he's well briefed on those, Greg, and I think it was a very positive meeting.
From here, what are the KPIs or whatever you might call them? Like, how do we, going forward, gauge success? Because you talked off initially that we needed a plan in here, in a 9-week plan, and it was something we don't want to see, perhaps unlikely, but a threat to actual services at the hospital across the board, right? So how do we gauge over the next while, what period of time, and what are the indicators to suggest that this action has begun to deliver results that will make life better for the staff, that will make patients to be more confident about going in there, and so on? So what do you see as how we judge that going forward?
Well, I think the minister is in a unique position now, having been so clearly briefed to make a change. And he's there with his advisors from HSE, Department of Health. And in fact, Minister McConnellogue was present for most of the meeting as well. So there were a significant number of important people in that room to hear and understand what the issues were. And he has it firsthand. And that's been coupled with a very clear message from the family doctors. So I suppose the ball is with the minister. He has made the effort to come, and it's been very welcomed by us. So that is fantastic. And I think he has a great opportunity now to make a difference. And I suppose you really have to give some time. I suppose we'd like to hear something back in 4 to 6 weeks. Things have to be balanced, I suppose, Greg. But I suppose we, as consultants, we would like to hear something back within 4 to 6 weeks.
Okay. I know you're very busy, as is our doctor, but I know you have an appointment very shortly. So Dr. Michael Sugrue, consultant, breast surgeon at Letterkenny Hospital, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Take care. Dr. Paratian, I think it's positive in that now we're having a grown-up conversation out in the public now, that the consultants have their voice, the family doctors have their voice. We have the ear of the health minister. For so long, another minister said to me, you have been talking about that hospital for a very long time. Now we're having a conversation, hopefully, to a means to an end.
Yeah, I would agree with Mr. Sugrue that our meeting was, at the end of it, very positive, because we felt the minister had got the message loud and clear that he was prepared to do something about it. And I think genuinely, he does care. And I think he's understood the complexity of the situation and what needs to be done. I mean, his team is going to come here and, as I said, do a forensic examination of what's happening in the hospital. I mean, our job as GPs was to highlight the concerns of our patients and advocate on behalf of our patients. And we've done that. And we have insisted that, like the consultants, that we need to have for him to come back to us, or his team, I should say, him or his team, to come back to us in the new year to let us know what's going on, so that we keep the ball rolling. We have insisted that we have a medical assessment unit up and running as soon as possible. We have a meeting on the 8th of December, a Zoom meeting with the CEO of the Salter Group, Tony Canavan, with the GPs to highlight what's going on and what is happening and where do we go with this. And so hopefully there's some positivity.
I think that's going to be, Doctor, sorry to cut across you. Sorry. I think that's going to be a really interesting meeting there, because it'll be very interesting to gauge the approach to that meeting by Mr. Canavan. In that beforehand, it was, look, it is what it is. We've a model of health. Letterkenny is the same funding as Sligo. We need to look at things one way rather than another. I recognise the issues. We need to work towards them. That's grand, right? But it'll be very interesting to see if that meeting, it's a solution-focused meeting, and if the tone has changed at all. I'll be very interested to find out.
We had a previous meeting with Mr. Canavan and with the local management earlier before this in November. I can say this certainly about us in Donegal. We are unique in Donegal in terms of our capacity, our complexity of cases that we have here, our geographic isolation, Greg, and also, as Mr. Sugarn, the persistent underfunding of this. And therefore, we are supposed to be a Model 3. We are certainly working at well above a Model 3. If you look at our capacity for our EED, our emergency department, we are on par with one of the leading teaching hospitals in Dublin, St. James's. Same numbers. And they are a Model 4, well-staffed, you know, national hospital. So there's no argument here, for his team to look at this and say, well, look, these guys are working well above their thing. They're understaffed. They're underfunded. We have to do something about this. And I think, in all fairness to the minister and his team, they have heard us loud and clear. And I think we will be seeing progress here, and we hope that this progress is going to be early 2024 and change is happening.
Fingers crossed, and we will give that equal coverage of positivity, of improvements, as we have this, of course, because it's our hospital, it's your hospital, it's mine hospital. We're all pulling in the one direction, and hopefully now we have an oar in the hands of the Minister for Health. Go ahead.
And I'd like to just say one more thing. Just thank you to the radio stations or newspapers, etc., to keep us in the public domain, and that we keep going with this. We're going to be working here. We're going to always be, as GPs here in Donegal, the advocates for our patients' concerns and safety. And we'll keep doing that because that's part of our job.
Dr. Raghavan Paratian, thank you so much for your time. Thank you. Take care of yourself. Okay, let's take a break. Any views on that? 086 6025000. Fair play, Dr. Raghavan and his GP colleagues, for highlighting the issues at Letterkenny University Hospital. Time it was sorted for everyone, patients and staff in the hospital. We are really grateful for the stand you're taking. Good morning, Greg. Where were all these doctors and consultants during the lockdown? They were sat on their laurels. As health professionals, what they bought was the right thing, whether you agree or not. Could you ask the doctor why there were only a few trolleys when the minister was visiting, when any other time there was a queue? Thanks, Greg. It was 5-3. Do you know what I'll do? During the 10 o'clock break, I'll actually look at the last few Fridays, to be fair, okay? Because I did make a quip on Friday about there being few waiting. But what I'll do is I will have a look at consecutive Fridays so we get a trend. How's that? Thanks all those GPs who are working hard for the people of Donegal on our behalf to fix our hospital. Was there Wednesday night with my young son. Painters flat out at 7:38 p.m. in the evening. Workmen doing a lot of work to the children's ward, all in preparation for the minister's visit on Friday. Is this right? You saw it. What do you think? Was the hospital showcasing exactly what's going on in there? The people at the top obviously trying to shape the place up to make the place look good, especially that late at night. In my opinion, problems arise from who's at the top, and perhaps it would do no harm and have more than one person at the very top of management. Well, you know, cosmetically, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a bit of cosmetic work that went on, but the GPs and consultants weren't going to allow a smokescreen either. They were there, they had a meeting, a number of them, and they made things very clean. So a lick of paint might make things look a little bit better, but make no mistake, the GPs and consultants had their say. Dr. Peter O'Rourke, former consultant, orthopaedic surgeons, with us on the show now. Good morning to you, Peter. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
I suppose I'm interested, actually, to get your views on some statistics that the minister furnished us. Obviously, he wanted to come up with some positivity. And it was, as it relates to, you know, waiting lists dropping, that we'd made remarkable progress, by his account, over the last few years. Just interested in your view, your assessment of how you believe those improvements were achieved.
Well, I think it was a masterclass in obfuscation what the minister said. He gave figures of between 25 and 30% reduction in waiting lists. And you did ask him, was it the NTPF or was it in the hospital? And he managed to fudge that one. It's all the NTPF. The NTPF were spending approximately €1 million euros a year for the last probably 10 to 15 years in Letterkenny. Last year, they spent 7.25 million outsourcing patients. The NTPF have spent probably between 1.5 and 2 billion in private hospitals since it was established, I think, in 2005. So any waiting list reductions are entirely due to the NTPF.
But he makes no apologies for that, Peter. He says we have to have a twin approach. He likes pumping money into private hospitals. We have to do it in-house, and we have to use that private capacity where it's available. He's unapologetic in the two-pronged approach.
But it is somewhat ironic that the amount spent on Letterkenny has probably tripled in the last year to 18 months. It shows the necessity in Letterkenny. So if they'd actually invested some of the money they invested in increasing private hospital services in a public hospital, it wouldn't have been necessary. There's two aspects to the NTPF. One, it's the only reason all the private hospitals in Ireland exist, because they wouldn't have managed to survive without the NTPF. But the other thing is, they're taking staff from public hospitals as well. And you wonder, for instance, when the Children's Hospital comes online, will they be able to get enough nurses and other staff to work there? Because they're going to need a hell of a lot more than they have in the current Children's Hospital. So it's a two-edged sword. You may get short-term relief, short-term benefit, but in the long term, it actually is detrimental. But there's an even worse thing. In Letterkenny now, the NTPF are taking patients who are on a public waiting list for 2 weeks and sending them to the NTPF. It's an absolute joke. It used to be 6 months or 9 months, which was reasonable. Now, if a patient is on a waiting list for 2 weeks, before the doctors can even schedule them, they've been sent to the
NTPF.
Why
is that a problem?
It's a problem because it's a two aspects. One, it's money being taken out of the public health service and put into the private service. That's number one. And number two is, if all these patients are treated privately and operated only by consultants, we will not have a next generation of trained doctors. I mean, it was bad enough during COVID, which people working in hospitals and predominantly surgeons in every discipline got nothing to do because there was no planned surgery for nearly 3 years or very little. There's all of these surgeons are going to be less trained than they should be, and the next generation behind is going to have a knock-on effect. And if we basically farm out all our planned surgery to the private sector, how can we train the next generation of doctors?
Mm-hmm. And also, if the turnaround is that quick, and I suppose if you're waiting for treatment, you're going to say, well, that's grand. But where is the motivation to sort of provide those services in-house if after 2 weeks a patient's removed to a private hospital?
Well, recruitment is difficult at the best of times in Letterkenny. How would you recruit a surgeon? I mean, every surgeon is very motivated to do as much surgery as they're allowed or can do. So if you don't allow them to do surgery, why would a doctor take a job in Letterkenny? If you're a junior doctor in training and there's no training happening, why would you go and work in a hospital? And if you cannot staff a hospital like Letterkenny with a good quality of junior doctors and consultants, then the place will gradually grind to a halt.
What about some of the commitments he's made in terms of assessment units and what have you? I mean, that's outside of the, I don't know, is it outside of the area that you work? But do you think we will see improvements with some of the commitments that were given to the GPs and consultants?
I think, yes, if you had a properly staffed medical assessment unit. But, I mean, one of the things that struck me was the minister's lack of understanding of what happens. He was busily talking about appointing new emergency medicine consultants to have a senior presence in the emergency department to prevent admissions. Emergency consultants do not admit to hospitals. They do not have any admission privileges to hospitals. They assess people in the emergency department, but it is hospital consultants, not the emergency department consultants, who actually admit people. So he could put 100 emergency medicine consultants in the emergency department. It wouldn't reduce the number of admissions by one. Having a medical assessment unit, as Raghavan Parathian said, would make a big difference if GPs could send patients in there to be medically assessed rather than letting them deteriorate till they need an emergency admission. But as he rightly said, they can't get investigations. Nobody has actually explained why they can't get investigations. And there's two simple reasons. One is cardiac investigations need to be significantly expanded in Letterkenny because that's one area where people wait for tests. But the other is diagnostics. Mm-hmm. Patients are admitted for CT scans and MRI scans because they cannot have them done as an outpatient. But nobody has explained why. about 60% of the capacity for investigations like that are taken up by screening for cancer cases. And these are not patients who are going to be diagnosed with cancer. These are patients who have had cancer and they're having follow-up afterwards. And while that is necessary, it has never been provided for in diagnostics. You need to have, you almost need to have separate diagnostic centres for cancer follow-up care, because I've had colleagues who've admitted patients for 4 and 5 days to get an MRI scan of a wrist because they cannot get it otherwise, and the patient's care will be adversely affected if they have to wait six weeks to get a scan, when it will actually be detrimental to the actual outcome of treatment.
Yeah, you've said in the past you'd be concerned about getting older in this part of the world. What's happened over the last number of weeks, would it make you any more optimistic?
Not in the slightest. I think everybody's naive if they think the minister will actually do anything in any sort of a time frame that would be beneficial to the hospital. I was involved in the management of the hospital at various committee levels for literally the entire time I worked of 23 years. I was on a phase three development plan 23 years ago. I was on ones where we were discussing a new ambulatory care facility to involve day surgery, endoscopy and outpatients. That went by the wayside. I remember 10 years ago after the flood talking to the general manager and saying that I would never do another clinic on the site, on the campus site at the hospital. And he said, don't be ridiculous. Of course, we'll have a new outpatients. Now his view is we don't need one because we have this lovely facility which they're paying rent for an annual basis down in McGinley. I mean, nothing changes.
Yeah. And then, of course, in 2016, there were commitments to increase the ED capacity. That never happened either.
Yeah. It's not, as I said, none of these problems are new. They have been around for 20 years. So why they think suddenly? The only reason is the minister now is sort of in the crosshairs of everybody, and he's publicly gone out and said he would have to deal with this. But there's an election next year. By the time there's an election, he won't be Minister of Health and it'll be someone else's problem. So it'll be just kicked down the can will be kicked down the road. And I would not have any great expectation that there'll be any positive outcome of this. Publicity is great, but whether it'll benefit the hospital or not remains to be seen. And the other thing is that, you know, as I said, obfuscation. The minister was sort of extolling the virtues of our gynaecology service. But the problem was there wasn't major resources put in to increase that and resolve the problems there. A lot of the resources were moved sideways rather than new resources. And the minister was talking about the extra money that he's poured into Letterkenny. That money was poured into every hospital in the country. It wasn't over and above what was already needed. And the problem is Letterkenny needs a lot of money over and above what was already spent.
Yep.
But that ain't going to happen very quickly.
No, because that's the generations of underspending. Okay, listen, thanks for your views as always. Thanks for accepting our invite. Dr. Peter O'Rourke, retired consultant, orthopaedic surgeon. Of course, we want your views on this as well. 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 0749 125000. Emails also to comments at highlandradio.com. It is the 9 till noon show. And again, sorry if it appears that we're back on this issue again, but obviously it's important that we talk about it off the back of the events of Friday and Thursday as well. We had another minister up here, and it is not to be negative. It's not to spin a negative narrative. That's not what we're here for. But we've heard from GPs, consultants, former consultants, with an understanding on something that's as important to, as anything, I think, to all of our well-being, and that's how well or otherwise our acute hospital functions. And we just had to give it the space that's required.